Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma, and I'm so glad to have you along with me. Because you know, if it's happening in the world of Christian historical fiction, we are talking about it. If you would like more information about today's guest or about any of our other episodes, you can find all that in our show notes, which are on the website, which is christianhistoricalfiction.buzzsprout.com. So you can go there and look up everything that we talk about. Last week, we were so fortunate to have Christy Cambrin on the show with us, talking about her new book, The Paris Dressmaker, which is set in France during World War II. And today we have another absolutely terrific World War II author with us. She came to writing sort of in an unconventional way through the field of science, but it was her family tales that drew her to writing World War II. She is a Christie Award finalist, a Carol Award winner, and she has also won the Reader's Choice Award from Faith, Hope, and Love. The book we are going to be talking about today is her 13th novel. So please join me in welcoming the incomparable Sarah Sundin to the show. Welcome, Sarah. We're so glad to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Liz.
I just finished reading When Twilight Breaks, and I absolutely loved the book. It's one of my favorites of yours. But before we jump in talking about that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I have written, this is my 13th novel set in World War II, and I'm a former pharmacist, and I formally retired 2 years ago now. And I live in California, Northern California. I'm married. We have 3 grown-up children now, and 2 of them are out of the nest. The last one just finished up 4 years in the Navy, and he's back home with us taking classes online. So that's who I am.
So you have a busy life then.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anybody who doesn't.
Right. So you mentioned that you're a former pharmacist. How does a pharmacist make the jump to being an author?
Not easily. No, that wasn't my plan. I never planned to be an author other than, you know, every little girl who loves to read thinks I should write a book. And of course, I love to read and I thought I should write a book, but I put it in the same category as becoming a ballerina or an Olympic figure skater. It was like one of those things that only happened to a precious few, and get a real job that actually pays. And I love science, so I went into pharmacy. I loved pharmacy, really loved it. And it was a good fit for me. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I could work one day a week as a pharmacist. And then one day when my youngest was 1.5 years old, I literally woke up from a dream that wouldn't leave me alone. I knew it was a novel, and I'd never had anything happen like that to me before. Never. I had to write that book, and I wrote it. And then I wrote another, and I've been writing ever since. So then I had to figure out how to write. So I started going to writers' conferences, going to a writer's group, and started submitting eventually. And it took me a while. It took me 10 years after the day I had that first dream, 10 years until my first novel was published. Quite a few rejection letters in the process, but it was all good. It was all a process of me learning the craft, learning the industry, and more importantly, what God was doing in my heart, making me ready for this nonsense. So it's been quite a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, that sounds like it. But tell us a little bit about When Twilight Breaks.
When Twilight Breaks was set in 1938 in Munich, Germany, and it follows 2 Americans. It was inspired by my grandfather. He was a professor of German, and I knew he'd studied in Germany. And then I found out he was in Germany for his junior year abroad in 1936. Well, that was Nazi Germany. And that really struck me. And I thought, wow, what would it have been like to have been an American living in Nazi Germany? And I never thought about that before. And so I came up with a story idea. So Evelyn Brand is an American foreign correspondent living in Munich, you know, trying to get the stories. And Peter Lang is a PhD student at the University of Munich. They're both Americans. Evelyn's trying to expose all the oppression in Germany. And meanwhile, Peter is more drawn to the stability and order that he sees, and he would kind of like to import that back to America. And they meet each other, and sparks fly. But Peter begins to see the truth, what Evelyn is showing. And Evelyn starts to see some of what Peter's saying too. But he begins working with her to get information about the Nazi party to her for her stories. And so they both end up in a little bit of trouble.
Wouldn't be fun if they weren't in trouble at some point.
It wouldn't be a novel. It would be a really life story. What we want in our lives is no trouble, no conflict, you know, all happy, happy, happy. And it makes a horrible novel. Right.
This is a really different setting for you, a different time period taking place in Europe, not having to do with fighting or anything like that. Why did you pick something so different to write about this time?
Well, my first 12 novels had really focused on the U.S. military, from Army Air Force pilots to officers of the Navy to flight nurses, but they'd all had a connection to the U.S. military. And I realized I was getting pigeonholed as a, not just a World War II novelist, but a military World War II novelist. I like to challenge myself with each novel, each proposal that I write. And so I wanted to do something a little different. And so I thought about writing novels set in Europe, but focusing on Americans. So I have the next three novels, including When Twilight Breaks, the next three novels all feature Americans living in Nazi-occupied countries, or Nazi Germany in this case. So I kind of get to keep my American voice and be kind of an observer of what was going on. So a slight detachment, but also, you know, being on the ground and watching what was going on, and I'm reacting to it. I'm able to write some really exciting stories. I just finished the next book that'll come out next year, and it turned out to be really exciting. So it's been a fun series to write. Not series, they're not actually connected. This is also the first time I haven't written a series. I've written three standalones.
So it was a good challenge for you then, and you enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, I don't want to keep writing the same story over and over again. And I always like to try something different with each proposal, just to keep myself growing. Because, you know, having been a lifelong reader, of course, all writers are, and we've all come across authors where we read the first couple books and like, I love their writing. And then they just keep writing the same thing. And, you know, they change the heroine's hair color and maybe her profession, but basically all the novels are the same from then on out, and you lose interest. And I knew right away I didn't want to be that author. I wanted to do something a little different each time. And yes, I will lose some readers with each series, but hopefully I will pick up new ones and expand. And a lot of them like the variety, like to see me going different directions.
Well, I can't imagine that you would lose any readers with this, even though it's different for you and doesn't focus on the U.S. military. It screams Sarah Sundin from beginning to end. And I think it's just absolutely wonderful. And you handle both with a great deal of success.
Well, thank you.
Now, I'm very interested because when I pick out titles from my novels, lately, I've been just having a really hard time coming up with something decent, it seems.
I hate titles.
I love When Twilight Breaks, though. How did that title come about?
Oh, we had so many rounds. My working title was Through a Glass Darkly. And I love that title, but my publisher didn't. And neither did my agent. Like, nah, it doesn't work. Like, but it's so perfect. I wanted two concepts in the title. I wanted the concept of darkness or darkness falling, and I wanted the concept of shattering or breaking, because Kristallnacht plays an important role in the story. So I kind of wanted that sense of everything's falling apart, everything's shattering, and darkness coming. So we had all these words that we were playing around with. So When Twilight Breaks seems to be, it was the one that people settled on. I liked it because the twilight, of course, is a time when day is turning to night. So it was really appropriate for 1938, when you just see the darkness coming and you know you can't stop it. And we also like the play on words, because we should talk about twilight falling. And so it was taking a phrase that we're used to and twisting it. So that was kind of fun too.
What is your research like? I know that you do a lot of very detailed research, and it shows in this book. Just the names of the streets and things that you mention in Munich, you had to have done a ton of research. So how do you go about that, and what is it like for you?
It helps that I'm kind of obsessive. And that perfectionist streak that everybody says, you kill the perfectionist streak. Well, sometimes it comes in handy, but I do have to always have to tell myself enough, enough. And the deadline really helps with that. But I always start general and then go broad. Now, for me, since I have focused on the actual war years before then, I knew a lot about Nazi Germany because you can't study World War II without learning about it, but I never studied it in depth. I read wonderful, Richard Evans, The Third Reich in Power. And he has a wonderful series with three books. And one is The Rise of the Third Reich, which is the 20s to the early 30s, and then Third Reich in Power, which is the 30s up until World War II. And then he's got, I can't remember the third title, but it's basically, I think it's at the Reich at War, but anyway, it has to do with the war years. And it's a huge book. It's like 1,000 pages, but he really breaks down German society. So he studies each component separately, from the politics, the culture, to the oppression against the Jews and how it changed during that decade. So that was my starter book. And then I kind of went from there. I read books about Kristallnacht. I read about the Munich Conference, which plays a role in the story. I read William Shirer's Berlin Diary, which was wonderful because heroine is a foreign correspondent. And William Shirer was a foreign correspondent in Berlin at that time. And so he not only talks about the events going on, but he talks about the day-to-day of being a correspondent and how he was working with his informants and some of the trouble they got into. So I was able to pull a lot of those stories and tweak them for my novel. And just reading about Munich itself and spending a lot of time on websites that had historical photos and, of course, good old Google Maps to get those streets right. But going back and going, well, is that what it was called in 1938? Because they changed names.
Yeah.
So little things like finding out in Munich, there's Königsplatz, which is a very famous, kind of a very central location in Munich, especially in the Nazi era, a lot of government buildings and monuments and stuff. And the Nazis had renamed it Königlicher Platz. And so I had to use the term that they used. And it was kind of fun. I had to work it in because a modern reader reading that would go, there is no such thing. Where'd you get that? So I had Peter, who had been to Munich before, mention Königsplatz and then say, oh, yeah, that's right. Now they call it Königlicher Platz. So I was able to kind of put that in for the modern reader, but also make it sound true to character. So yeah, I do tons of research. I keep a running bibliography. And for each book, I usually have about 50 entries for each new book.
Oh my.
Writes and books and personal correspondence and stuff like that.
That's funny that you would mention William Shirer because I have read Berlin Diaries and I was reading your book going, wow, this sounds a lot like William Shirer. So yeah. I did catch that in there.
Yeah. And there were other things because they were, and so I started researching other foreign correspondents in Germany. And it was fun, you know, reading about the banter they have and how young they were. It was funny because Michelle Yule, who's a writer friend of mine, she's also a published author. She's a former journalist. And so I had her read the novel and before it was published, you know, kind of do a journalist edit on it. And one of her comments was, they're much too young to be foreign correspondents. That's something you work your way into. That'd be something for people in their 40s and 50s. But then I was reading all these accounts of the foreign correspondents and they were young guys. They were, you know, in their 20s and 30s. So I had to, you know, go by the history. So that was fun. It kind of threw me for a loop. But listening to the stories that they told, and not just Shirer's, but there are others, and I found some wonderful resources from other journalists from that era, and really interesting to read about.
Have you ever been to Germany? Because it seems so real. You make it come so much alive. I just wonder if you've been there.
I have. My husband was doing medical research. He was he's a pharmacist, but he was doing medical research for quite a while. And his company was doing research with the German Red Cross in Frankfurt. So he was traveling so often, and kids were little, or young, I should say young. And he finally got fed up with it and marched into his boss's office and said, if you're going to make me travel so often, why don't you just send the whole family over there for the summer? And they said, okay. He said, what? So anyway, we spent the entire summer of 2007 in Mannheim. And it was great. The kids were, my youngest turned 9 that year. And then the oldest was 14. So they were out of diapers, out of strollers. No one needed naps. And we weren't in the really obnoxious teenage years. So it was just a fabulous summer. So we traveled around a lot. We never did get up to Berlin, but we did spend quite a few days in Munich. unfortunately, you don't think, oh, I'm going to write a novel. I was barely writing at that point, and I hadn't been published yet. And I never thought I would write a novel set in Munich. And I wasn't taking pictures. And this was before cell phone cameras. And the only photos we have from our days in Munich are ones my oldest son took. I'm looking through, and we have hundreds of photos. And like, how did we miss Munich? How on earth? It was a beautiful, beautiful city. But I love Germany. I love the German people. In the story, I mention Gemütlichkeit, which is loosely translated as hospitality. And we've truly experienced it when we're in Bavaria. And we went to this B&B with our kids. And this woman, her name was Teresa. I will never forget her. And she came out to our car. We couldn't even get out of the car. And she's like, oh, die Kinder. And she's bringing ice cream out for them and candy. And she grabs my arm and tucks it under hers like you would with your dearest friend. And she gives me a tour of the house and shows me everything. And I mean, she didn't let go of my arm the entire time. And I thought to myself, this is Gemütlichkeit. So I have a character, Herr Gold, who is, he's my Gemütlichkeit character. And he's warm and hospitable. And so I transferred some of Teresa's warmth to him.
Oh, that is a wonderful, wonderful story. I love that so much. The Library Journal said in their review of your book, attentive readers may see parallels between the circumstances depicted in the book and today. Okay, so here's a tough question then. How do you think that that is?
Oh, that's hard without getting political. And I'm very careful not to get political. Mostly the division. There were so many things about the rise of the Nazis and what I was seeing in America at the time. I kept grabbing my husband saying, oh my gosh, listen to this, listen to this. And it just sounded like it was something that was going on today in America. And I'll let the readers decide for themselves whether it describes the right or the left or both. I'm not going into that, but I see it. But I think what scared me the most is in Nazi Germany at the time, especially in the early 1930s, it was basically you were told and you believed that if you opposed communism, that you better get in line with Hitler because at least he was holding back the communist hordes. And of course, most middle-class Germans feared communism because what was Stalin doing? He was murdering the intelligentsia. He was murdering the professionals. And so for a middle-class German, they feared the Soviets. They had a good reason to fear. So many of them and so many Christians lined up behind Hitler because he promised order and prosperity. And they were willing to put up with the loss of freedom and with repression of people that they didn't like very much, just so they could have stability, so they could have jobs, so they could keep the Soviets away. And then on the other side, other people were saying, well, if you're opposed to Hitler, if you're opposed to fascism, well, then you better get on line with the communists. And so there was no middle ground. There was no, well, can we take some of the best concepts from both the far right and the far left, find a middle ground where freedoms are respected on both sides? And sadly, I see that so much in America today. It's like, if you oppose this, you better be in line with that. The middle ground just being disdained. So it's kind of scary seeing that aspect of it.
You have exclusively written in World War II, except I did read on your website that that very first novel that you wrote, the one that was The Dream, was a contemporary. So why settle in at World War II? What was it that drew you to that era?
First, it started off with just a story, and the story idea that became A Distant Melody. And it started off with a what if question that was raised in another. I've written two contemporary novels that will both never, ever be published. At least I pray not. They're really bad. But it raised a what if question. And I kind of had these two characters that met at a party and they were really attracted to each other, but then they were separated and they didn't get their contact information. And I thought it'd be really sweet if he went through all these wonderful things to find her. And it didn't work in a contemporary novel because he'd just Google her. Right. And, you know, it's not even a short story. It's like, oh, that's a cute little, you know, thing you say to your grandkids. But I thought, like, well, wouldn't it be something if a guy had to go to the city where she lived and she had a common last name, so he ripped the telephone page out of the telephone book and went in a taxi and had to go to all these homes And so that's actually the genesis for Distant Melody. And I realized it had to take place in a historical era. And I thought to myself, and I laugh at my old self, I said, World War II would be easy because it's not very long ago. And my grandparents told stories and my grandmother was still alive at the time. And she was quite a storyteller. It's like, oh, that'd be easy. I know that era. Yeah. I'm really glad I didn't know at the time, because if I had known how much research I'd have to do, I would never have even started. And I'm so glad I did, because once I started researching, I fell in love with the era. And then also I had family stories that really pulled me in deeper, because as I said, my grandmother was a storyteller. So she used to tell about what it was like on the home front. You know, she didn't have a washing machine. She didn't have a dryer. She's washing my father's diapers by hand, hanging them up to dry because she can't buy a washing machine because all the metal, you know, they're not making appliances. And so she told stories. And then my grandfather, one grandfather was in the Navy as a pharmacist mate, which is a medic. His brother was a B-17 pilot. And then my other grandfather, the one I was talking about earlier, who was a German professor, well, he had a heart murmur and wasn't able to serve in the armed forces, but he used his knowledge of German and his knowledge of German culture to train American soldiers, officers who were going to go into Germany after the occupation. So I kind of had grown up hearing all these stories. And so it was kind of a natural place for me. And then I just found my voice there. And you know, my scientific training helped out with all the military characters, and it just seems to be a real good fit for me.
I think your readers would definitely agree World War II is a very, very good fit for you, and we're glad that you picked that era.
I've never milked a cow, so that kind of leaves that out. True.
Why is World War II fiction so hot right now, do you think?
Oh, I'm just so excited to see this. I mean, when I went to my first writers' conference in 2003, they said, we don't want historicals, and we definitely don't want World War II. And then finally, things started to turn around for historicals. I finally got my contract in 2008. But even so, there were very few of us writing World War II. And it was still definitely, I was hearing from other authors who were trying to write it and saying, you know, they were just getting so many feelers like, oh, World War II, that's a tough sell, that's a tough sell. And it really wasn't until maybe 5 years ago that it really picked up steam. And of course, within the Christian market, we always see that we're a few years behind the secular market. And so the trends that rise up in the secular market hit us a little later. So I was watching World War II take off in the secular market and going, please, please, please let it take off here. And it has. I mean, almost to the point where I'm calling it endorsement fatigue, because I'm getting so many World War II novels that are coming out and they want me to endorse or read for influencing. And I'm actually running out of time. And it's a wonderful, and it's exciting, because that means that there's a real, and there's a great variety of them. But as far as why it is, I don't know. I've always found it a fascinating era. I think it has perennial appeal, and obviously these things come in waves. But I think it will always have some low-lying interest, and then with peaks and valleys that come out, because it's just such a dramatic era. There were so many interesting things. And because it was a true world war, there's so many different aspects to it to explore. So I hope this is a long-lasting trend.
Yes, I do too.
Selfish reasons. But I think it's also because there's so many, I just find it such a rich era to write about. And also one that has so many things that you can glean from your own personal life, especially when life is hard, because, you know, we've all been grumbling about the pandemic and the quarantine, and 2020 has been hard. It's been a hard, hard year, and 2021 hasn't been any easier. But when you read about World War II, you can say, wow, they had it tough too.
Yeah.
In fact, they had it a lot tougher, and they got through. So what did they do to get through? And what can I borrow from that to help me in my own life? So I think it gives perspective and encouragement.
I agree 100%. So what's up next for you?
The novel that I'm just finishing up, it's due on Monday. It'll be turned in before your listeners hear this. But it is set in Paris in World War II, which I was a little bit hesitant to do because that's really trendy. And Paris in World War II is super trendy. Once again, I have two American characters, so it's a little bit of a fresh spin. The heroine runs an artsy left bank bookstore, an English language bookstore modeled off of Shakespeare and Company, which is a very famous center for American expatriates in the 20s and 30s. But Sylvia Beach, the owner of that bookstore, stayed throughout the occupation, and her bookstore was open until December 1941, with Pearl Harbor. So for a year and a half after the occupation, she kept her bookstore running. And that fascinated me. So my heroine does that. And then the hero is a Wright Bank factory owner, and he is seen as a collaborator, but he has something else going on that most people don't know about. And so Paul and Lucy clash with each other, but of course, love wins out and they see the truth about each other. But there's some interesting resistance activity and just the rising tension during that year as after the occupation up until Pearl Harbor.
That sounds fascinating as always. And we will definitely be looking forward to that one coming up next year, you said?
Yeah, 2022.
Okay, very good. Do you have any last words for the listeners?
Oh, I can't think of anything. Just so thankful for you having me. And I'm thankful for all of you who enjoy historical fiction and for so many of you who have recently discovered World War II fiction. And I keep hearing from people who are discovering it for the first time and are really enjoying it. And I think the pandemic is really raising the interest lately and just that sense of comfort and encouragement from the past. So I just hope that when you read these novels set in World War II, that you'll be encouraged that we can get through this tough time because people have gone through tougher times than this in the past.
Very well said. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It sure has been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Liz.
That's about all the time we have for today. Thank you once again to Sarah Sundin for being on the show and for being such a terrific guest. I learned so much from her, and I hope that you did too. If you would like to find out more about Sarah and about her books, be sure to go to the podcast website, which is christianhistoricalfiction.buzzsprout.com. You will find the show notes there, and there is a link to When Twilight Breaks there as well, so you can pick up your own copy of the book. Like I said, I've read it, and it's absolutely terrific, so you don't want to miss out on it. Talking about missing out on things, you don't want to miss out on a single episode because we have so many great guests coming up. So be sure that you subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so you don't miss a thing. Like next week's guest, who is Suzanne Woods Fisher. I am so thrilled to have her join us on the show, and I know it's going to be terrific. Don't miss it. Please subscribe. You can also follow Christian Historical Fiction Talk on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So please be sure to look us up there and interact with us. I'd love to get to know you as listeners. And while you're on the internet, please check out my website, which is liztolsma.com, and you will find out there about some of my new releases and some of my upcoming books. Thank you once again so much for joining me for this episode, and we will see you next time.